Hello and welcome again to Catholic Answers Focus. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and today we continue our series on healing and the Catholic faith. Our guest this time is Dr. Gregory Bataro. He's the executive director and founder of the Catholic Psych Institute. Dr. Bataro received his doctorate in clinical psychology from the Institute for the Psychological Sciences, a graduate school in Arlington, Virginia, that integrates Catholic philosophy and theology with sound, empirically validated psychology. Before finishing his degree, he discerned a religious vocation with the community of the Franciscan Friars of the Renewal. He lived for 4 years in the Bronx, serving the poor in the tradition of St. Francis. Ultimately, feeling a prompting of God to pursue family life, Dr. Bataro then formed the Catholic Psych Institute in 2012 to connect Catholics around the world with therapists trained to integrate the faith with the practice of the faith. He is the author of The Mindful Catholic, Finding God One Moment at a Time. Dr. Greg Bataro, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a great joy to be here with you.
That's a heck of a biography. I hope I got it all right.
That's great. Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah, I have, you know, the only thing I like to add is, you know, specifically my time in the Bronx with the Friars, and I think probably pertinent to our time here today is the time that I got to spend with Father Benedict Rochelle. He was one of the founders of the CFRs, and he was a Catholic psychologist himself, and, you know, really formative. I got to spend some good quality time with him and learned a lot about, you know, bringing together the faith with the practice. So I like to add that in there as well.
Well, you learned at the feet of a master then, because he is somebody I know. People who I trust as tremendous leaders in the faith tell me, oh, my conversations with Father Grischel were some of the most important I ever had, which is striking.
It's really amazing. I mean, he was very, in some ways, very simple and always very humble. But he really did have such a profound effect on so many people. He was a trusted advisor, counselor to bishops, cardinals, and just many, many people in the church, Mother Teresa. It's really amazing.
It is amazing. He is of a very happy memory for very, very many people. As we were thinking about doing this series on healing and the Catholic faith, I came across your essay, which is on the blog page of CatholicPsych.com. And the title of it is, Who Are We and What Heals Us? And you speak about a healer from a Catholic perspective there. Or you speak as a healer from a Catholic perspective there. You talk at the beginning of that essay about a false dichotomy, an error in thinking that runs deep in the veins of our sense of self. What is this false dichotomy we live with?
Yeah, it's philosophically it's known as dualism. And it's this dichotomy which, really is a cultural, societal kind of thing that we've developed and grown up with over the years. And it's the split between a sense of our spiritual selves and our material selves, or, you know, our bodies. So our bodies and spirits are thought of as these two distinct and separate things. And you know, there certainly is a place for describing and talking about them separately. But what's missing is the very real sense of them being integrated. And our bodies and spirits are one. And that is the definition of our humanity. And so, I love John Paul II's line from Theology of the Body. He says, the bodies and the bodies alone make visible the invisible. And so he's saying that what's spiritual about us is made visible, is manifest visibly through the body. But they're not two distinct things. And when we separate them, we create that dichotomy, and it wreaks havoc both in our spiritual lives and our psychological lives. And there's many ways that happens. We have doctors who don't understand the role of the spirit. We have religious people who don't understand the role of psychology. And either way, it becomes disastrous for seeking healing, seeking growth, seeking spiritual maturity, seeking flourishing as human beings.
It's okay. So let's, if we can take the two sides of that, then how does a doctor, for example, who is technically very well prepared and has all the tools of modern science at his or her disposal, how does that doctor fail in the role of a healer, or potentially fail in the role of a healer by not acknowledging the spiritual side of the person being addressed?
There are lots of ways. I think, you know, the way that a person is relating to their sense of God, first of all, if they have a sense of God, and then how they see themselves in light of that being and in relationship with the creator of the universe, is going to have an effect on a person's psychology. So this is something that's been very well documented and researched through a secular psychologist who has developed this a whole field of something called positive psychology. And this psychologist by the name of Seligman has come up with these categories that he's discovered through his research of people who have resilience in the face of trauma and who ultimately experience the greatest flourishing. And one of the five qualities he boiled everything down to was a belief in a greater power. So even in a secular dimension, having a belief that there's somebody out there who is personal and is taking care of everything, then puts us at ease. And then that is a gateway. Then through our psychology, it affects our biology. And because our brains and minds have this really mysterious and interesting and complicated relationship, what we think, how we think, affects the way our brain operates. And then the way our brain operates is affecting every other system in the body. And so when it comes to even just very basic physiological processes, healing and inflammation and, you know, all sorts of ways that our body is working, how we think about ourselves affects those things. And then how we think about ourselves is affected by our belief in our place in the cosmos and the universe.
So the doctor then, who just sees the human body as a complex machine, is actually going or tending in a direction, maybe moving the patient in a direction that is unhelpful because it's missing one of these five components of healing.
Absolutely. It's unhelpful in a lot of ways, and that's one of them. And, you know, it's basically treating the human like an animal.
Yes.
And the problem is we are more than animals in the very basic fact that we know we are more than animals. And so just the knowledge that that there's more to us, we deserve more. You know, we know we shouldn't be caged. We shouldn't be determined by external factors. We shouldn't be manipulated. That, you know, we have this innate sense that we are beings who deserve to be loved, not used. You know, those are things that we carry. So when we're treated in such a way we're basically being treated as animals, right off the bat, we know something's wrong. And people might not even be able to put two and two together consciously, but there's a sense that something's really off. And that's why we care about things like bedside manner. You know, the way that the doctor talks about us or treats us. It becomes even more clear if the doctor is talking about or treating a loved one. You know, so when you have somebody who's facing end-of-life issues or somebody with maybe terminal cancer, then it becomes very clear that, you know, the doctor's belief or not belief in God and in afterlife and sort of the bigger issues can be really formative or detrimental to the practice of medicine itself.
So would you agree that the doctor who is essentially materialist and sees doctoring as in its essence a technical practice would be more likely to have moral failures as well in the treatment of patients, accepting things or even maybe encouraging things like the killing of patients and that
sure.
kind of thing?
Absolutely. Oh yeah. Yeah, I think that's huge.
Okay, so the impression I'm getting is I think you just outright said it then. If dualism is a problem, it's a problem on both sides, however. So what about the other side that over-spiritualizes the person, the human person, or maybe over-spiritualizes the process of healing? What are the dangers there?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's some really simplistic ways of thinking about us as sort of, kind of trapped spirits who are, you know, we have to shed the jailhouse of our bodies and sort of rise above them to heaven, you know, and that's our goal. When we die, we just leave behind this dirty, mucky, broken flesh stuff, and we sort of float into heaven as a spiritual being. And, you know, that mentality leads to, it might seem a bit colloquial, but it leads to very real pastoral problems in terms of helping people find healing. And so here's one example. I was just speaking with somebody who called in who they had a family member suffering from OCD scrupulosity. So this is an anxiety disorder with a specifically religious flair to it. And this person sought help from a priest. And the direction from the priest was that the person needed more grace and prayer in their life. And so recommended attending daily mass. And so now that person's scrupulosity escalated, and now they're so debilitated by panic and anxiety, they can't even leave the house, which is then a self-sabotaging cycle. Now they're afraid of going to hell, because if they die in this state and they haven't been following through on the priest's direction of going to mass every day, now they're disobeying the priest and in mortal sin. So that's just a simple example. I literally just heard it yesterday, where we don't have there's not a reverence or a respect for the fullness of the human person. There is a bodily aspect of the person. And in some ways, you know, we can dig even deeper into a philosophical error here. You know, dualism is a philosophical error, but it also is a heresy in that it's a denial of the incarnation. When God became man and we look at the human person of Jesus Christ, we look at his humanity, it's very real. He wasn't just putting on a human suit.
Yes, right. Okay.
And we're made in his image, you know, so we have to be able to really accept the mystery and the discomfort of not fully grasping, you know, how this integration and this unity really makes sense through and through, but we have to accept it. So there is this integration that's real. Our humanity is necessarily a bodily existence. And so the body matters, our psychology matters. You know, what's happening in the brain very directly and significantly affects the mind, that affects our soul. And all of these things are very directly interwoven. So to develop an expertise in psychology is a specialty, and it takes years of training, and it takes years of study, and it takes years of practice under supervision with other experts who have forged the way ahead. And so it's very dangerous when we have somebody who is trained and expert in spiritual things to assume then that they understand everything about the person when they haven't been trained in the areas of psychology. And that's what leads to that situation with that priest giving that very unhealthy and unhelpful direction to that person.
So the physician that we described earlier, is the technician physician, is not availing him or herself or encouraging the patient to avail him or herself of supernatural means of healing. The mistaken priest is missing that the person needs natural forms of healing. So maybe you can help us. You say in the essay that I referred to earlier, who are we and what heals us, that we need to make a distinction between natural and supernatural means of healings. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so again, that's a little bit more of a gray area, and I wouldn't necessarily hardline those definitions, because at the end of the day, I forget now, maybe you can add it in. Somebody, I remember reading a quote from a great spiritual writer that basically said there's no such thing as supernatural. Everything is natural because it's all of God's universe. So even the things that we see as miracles or miraculous or supernatural really are all part of God's plan in his mind.
Right.
But
okay.
I do think it's healthy to distinguish that in the sense that we can approach our work of helping people move forward towards their own personal flourishing and fulfillment with what we know and what we can expect and what we can study and, you know, sort of doing our part with the awareness that there's this whole other world of grace. And there's this whole other world of God's action, which ultimately is the most important thing. But on our part, we still have work to do. And the work that we have to do can be measured and rational and supported by intellectual pursuit. And that's where this idea of natural healing is important. You know, one place where this gets to be fleshed out really clearly is in work with spiritual attacks. So I work with a number of exorcists, and there are often times that I collaborate with spiritual directors or I collaborate with exorcists in helping people who are being attacked on multiple levels. So somebody can be attacked on a spiritual level directly by a demon, and then they also have psychological wounds from their own history, their own traumas, their own family dynamics, family of origin, issues that come out. And, you know, the demons are brilliant masterminds, and they know where the weak points are in a person's life. So it's never this very, you know, clear split between spiritual attack or a psychological wound. If there's a demon involved, they're using the psychological wounds. But when working with an exorcist, something that I've learned that they do is they first look for the natural explanation for things. Because, you know, we can work with that. There are certain things that we can work with on a natural level that are sort of the expected outcomes. And, you know, if there's a certain kind of trauma, if there's a certain kind of psychological disorder, like, say, schizophrenia, for instance, you know, there are, that's a diagnosis. It's a medical diagnosis. There's a sort of understood etiology, a sort of origin of where that might have come from. There's an expected and prescribed treatment plan. There may be medication that we use for things like that. So the first step is to approach things as much as we can on the just the very basic natural level of saying, okay, this is what we can do. And so I think Padre Pio said, pray as if it depends on God and work as if it depends on you. So that's kind of the motto of my practice. Like, I'm going to do everything I can, utilizing every skill and expertise that I've been trained in. And at the end of the day, I can go to sleep peacefully knowing I've done my part. Then I have to trust and also have a whole developed spiritual life to understand the action of God. And so he might miraculously step in and, you know, supernaturally take over. And there may be some beautiful healing or some incredible thing that happens. You know, or at the same time, maybe he wants us to just kind of keep plugging away and doing what we can do and using that to the best of our abilities.
Well, that brings me to you mentioned a specific kind of spiritual healing technique called Reiki in this essay. And you used this as an example of, and correct me if I'm getting this wrong, but essentially as an example of the wrong way to go about seeking the supernatural in healing. Can you kind of distinguish between a fully healthy Catholic view of seeking supernatural help and a kind of a Reiki or New Age type of seeking supernatural healing?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great sort of nuance. I think, you know, the New Age in general, what I think really the danger is that we kind of cut God out of the picture. And a lot of these healing techniques, you know, really border on, well, in some ways, like in Reiki, they totally cut God out of the picture. And it really makes it like we are the ones who have the power. And so Reiki specifically is this this practice where there's a practitioner who has to become a master, and, you know, through training, and then they have this power and they use these laying on of hands techniques, and they're passing the power, the energy from the world or the earth or whatever it is, you know, and actually creating these healing experiences for the people that they're working with. And I think it's good to step it back and sort of have a general understanding of what's wrong with that, because you can very easily see how Catholic practices can take on those same qualities. And that's when a Catholic practice, like praying a novena, or, you know, praying a rosary, can start to take on that kind of sense to it.
Yeah, I
like,
see.
Like, because I'm doing this, I'm going to affect this kind of change.
Right. Instead of I'm placing myself in God's hands.
Absolutely. So that ultimately that's the difference. Ultimately, that's the Catholic perspective. That's what we're doing is we are following Christ's call to be as children. And we are turning to our Father and we are submitting ourselves and humbling ourselves before him. We're laying ourselves down in front of him and saying, here we are, Lord. You know, we're here to do your will. And, you know, if it be according to your will, help us work through this situation. Heal this particular wound. You know, help this family. Help these people. Help me in my situation. But it's this idea of submission to the fatherhood of God. And that's what's missing from, you know, these New Age practices, specifically Reiki, but many others. And there's even ways where we can develop a sense of that self-ownership, self-power, empowerment kind of mentality, even with Catholic practices.
We'll have to leave it just there for this week. Thank you so much, Dr. Pataro, and thank you for listening. I am Cy Kellett, and next week we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Pataro with a focus on the mindfulness movement. What is a Catholic to make of healing practices taken from other traditions? That's next time on Catholic Answers Focus.